While you were reading, before your coffee gets cold, during any of the stories, did you tear up? Did a tear come to your eye and stream down your face?
No.
Come on.
I found it to be emotionally draining and depressing, though beautiful in its way, read. I think rather than tears, I just found it very sad. Yeah, a little depressing.
Of course, yeah. But for me, I don't know about depressing, but sad and emotional, like you said. And I think it, in a couple of places I did tear up. Wow, this author is giving us something here that I didn't expect, because I was coming in from life, death, sci-fi. This is science fiction, time travel. No, it ain't. It's just not the kind of time travel that we've been experiencing here at Life, Death, Sci-Fi.
At the risk of someone turning this off and deleting the episode immediately, is it sci-fi?
So, what did you mean by that?
Is this novel, is it science fiction?
This is where I want it to be. Science fiction. Is it science fiction? Is it romance? And what I put in our notes, is it science fiction? Is it romance? I find that this novel by Toshikazu Kawaguchi.
Okay.
You're smiling.
I'm just trying really hard. No, just go with it. I don't know the exact. I'm not a Japanese speaker. That sounds right to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wrote love stories. Definitely love stories. And to me, this is a romantic novel.
So you did a little research about the author. I didn't look at anything this time around, yeah.
I watched part of an interview with him. The most interesting thing I got out of that was when he was talking about time travel. And he was talking about regrets. And he's using his time travel to somehow relieve that feeling of regret and make changes from there. Now, I want to get into that a little later about how this particular time travel changes people or changes the world. But he was talking about his father died suddenly and he wasn't able to say goodbye.
Okay.
And he's always felt that if he could, some way, he would do that.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense as a premise, the inciting incident for writing the book. I'm certainly one full of regret, or exploring the theme of regret. I don't know how we want to approach this and going through each sort of, it's a set of intertwining short stories. Each of them does deal with the theme of regret. And I think to me, there's some I found a little more just discomforting than others, I think. For example, the second one, The Husband and Wife, where it deals with Alzheimer's, I just find that to be the worst thing that can happen with people is, or a fear of myself is like dementia, Alzheimer's. That's just so sad and really increasingly common. Most people, if they live long enough, will often get to a place where that can be the case for some degree. And then the idea of, say, knowing that's happening to you and then what you're going to put your family through, that's just terrifying, I think.
Fear, regret, terror. Yeah, it's there. Oh, for sure. For sure. Oh, this fits in with the Alzheimer's thing. When I was doing my research, there is a movie. I think it's a Japanese-made movie. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and check. In every single scene, there was something radically different than there was in the book. I watched the trailer and I thought, I would never watch this because it's so totally different. In subtle ways, with the Alzheimer's story, it wasn't the husband, it was the wife that had Alzheimer's. I don't know why they did that, because the wife was a nurse in the book who then decided to take care of her husband. And that was a big That was a big thing in the book. And how are they going to make that?
They could, maybe they're, I don't know when it was made, but, and I didn't focus on this, but there's some interesting gender roles and play in this book that are probably, I imagine, seem very believable and accurate to me in terms of where it's set and the time in which it's set. I don't know. They were trying to make some film that was challenging those in some ways, right? You could reverse some roles. He could be a nurse and he could take care of her. And there's no reason why that couldn't happen.
I'm going to go back and check on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just mad that they changed it.
Like, yeah, I'm somebody who doesn't like veering from... Yeah, yeah, I am too.
So the story that really got to me was the last one.
The mother and child.
Yes, yes.
So we could say that there's five...
Four stories?
Four, sorry. Yeah, four stories. The lovers is the first one. Husband and wife is the second. The sisters is the third. And mother and child is the fourth. This is Life, Death, Sci-Fi, and we are reading Before the Coffee Gets Cold by Toshikatsu Kawaguchi. Yeah.
Nice.
And these stories all take place in a cafe in Tokyo. Does it actually say they're in Tokyo? I can't even remember, but it seems clear that they are in Tokyo. And really, we're pretty much always in the cafe itself, although there's a few times that people were given a little bit of a background story or told something, not often, but just a few little times here or there where we're briefly outside of the cafe for a memory. Otherwise, it all takes place, within the same cafe. Yeah, time-wise, we move around a bit. A part of me was like, does this work as a Greek tragic element here in some ways? I do think we want to come back to the question of whether it's sci-fi. We're in this cafe, and there's a particular seat in the cafe. If someone sits in that seat and they're served some coffee, they can travel in time and they can stay in that other place, stay in that same seat in the cafe. So they do stay in the cafe, they have to stay in the seat, and they can stay there for as long as it takes the coffee to get cold.
What happens if they don't?
They become stuck like a ghost. There is a ghost who's sitting in that seat of somebody who did not finish the coffee until after it was cold, and they became stuck in time, to use Vonnegut's term there. Yeah. Anyway, and so that's where we are. Okay, before you go back to the story, can we just say this is not sci-fi?
Oh, you're going to say it's not sci-fi right now? This is life-death sci-fi, and if it's not sci-fi, then
I know
we should really stop talking about it.
That's the question. Yeah, because it's total fantasy.
Magical. Magical.
Yeah.
In one of the reviews that I read, it says magical realism, speculative fiction, and I think you're right, but
you want to keep talking about it.
No, what about, what is it, Platonite, the magical substance?
Oh, okay.
In the time machine?
Yeah.
I don't know. The room, this cafe that everybody's in, this seat, the coffee ceremony done by the people who work in the cafe, and the ageless, the timelessness, the mystery of the cafe as it was described by the author, and the three clocks on the wall, only one of them right. I really liked that part, and I wanted that part so badly to be science fiction. How can I bend the science fiction angle into this time machine of a cafe that is timeless?
So we got the time traveler, some Platonite maybe sprinkled across the ancient Tokyo, and Maybe this particular seat was constructed out of microscopic drops of platinite. That is all it takes.
Okay,
But I see your point. I think this it was like we wondered whether we should do Kindred, if we should discuss Kindred, and then we didn't do it, even though it's on so many lists, because we said, okay, there's no real device happening here.
Now that was almost eight novels ago that we started
It's
talking
true.
about Kindred, and then we
Yeah.
started reading the novels, and then I started looking for time travel novels, and I came across this one. This one's definitely under time travel. It should be, but science fiction. It's to me, it's like a romance novel that uses the time travel as a trope, and that trope can be used with science fiction, and it can be used with romance or suspense, whatever. But
Okay.
okay, I have a list here that I want to ask you about, and I only want you to say yes or no. There's no maybe. Yeses or no.
I don't do
Okay,
well with that.
in the novel, 11/22/63, written by Stephen King, there was a diner portal into another time. So the guy that was traveling was going through that, time traveling was going through that portal. So you say, no, that's not science fiction. It's just like a trope that was used in Stephen King's novel.
I don't know if it's a, yeah, doorway is a trope. Yeah. So I would say not sci-fi.
Okay, not. Okay, there's a book called Time and Again by Jack Finney. And what they do to time travel there is they take places like the Japanese cafe, the Tokyo cafe. Like in this novel, they took the Dakotas in New York City that have been there practically since the beginning of this country.
No.
So the time travel goes into the Dakotas and gets all of the history and feel and funk from that, and then just slips into this other time. And you still say no?
Sounds interesting, not sci-fi.
Not sci-fi. Okay. The Outlanders. Beautiful romantic story that she touches these magical stones in Scotland, I think, Ireland, Scotland. And she goes over into to an ancient time. No? Not
Not
science fiction.
sci-fi. Yeah, I know. My wife found out we were doing time travel. She's like,
See?
"Oh, you could read Outlander."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Well, it's
Okay,
not sci-fi, though."
okay. There, we've read this one. I don't know when we read this one, Hyperion. I don't think we ever did a show on it.
We did. I don't know if it was.
That was the
It
Lost
might have been
Show.
one that we lost. Yeah.
We've only lost one or two. Okay, The Lost Show. Maybe I'll have a look for that by Dan Simmons. And there's a time cave there.
Be honest, I don't remember the details of that cave
Okay, so this
well
one
enough.
woman went in the cave and she came out a baby. And then the father went back to the cave because what was happening was her daughter's body was just reverting back into, she was a young girl, then she was, a toddler, now she's a baby. He's taking the baby to the cave before it turns into just egg and sperm, and he wants the time cave to reverse that process.
That sounds like some supernatural phenomenon. I think the difference there is like with Hyperion is we're dealing with other planets, and so
Yes, they had to travel to other planets.
there's other elements there that are sci-fi, and the idea that there's an if there was some sort of alien world in which time travel, maybe arrival or something, where there's the way that they deal with time is totally different. Like that, I guess to me, if there's an alien aspect to it, then that could be sci-fi. I guess you could argue that everything
So every
supernatural is potentially alien. I don't know. But I feel like unless we're dealing with some sort of alien world.
I'll look at Back to the Future. They just went back to the 1850s.
But he's got a time machine.
Okay. Oh, we're just talking about time.
Like you need it to make it sci-fi, don't we need some kind of sci-fi element? It could be a typically with time travel, it seems like, and the easiest, cleanest way to do it is just to have a device. If you've got a machine, then it's sci-fi.
Okay, whether it's so explained you have or not. To have a machine to time travel and well, or if make you it don't, sci-fi?
If you don't have a machine, then what other aspect of the novel or the story is sci-fi for it to qualify as sci-fi?
Are we talking about this novel or any novel?
Any novel.
All right, so with the theories that are going on right now about space, time, the quantum theories, and looks at dimensions, we don't know what the fourth dimension, fifth dimension, any of the dimensions that we think are out there, we don't know what they are. We have some kind of feelings. We think maybe that there's something that is there that we can interact with, but we're not sure. But maybe in the future, we might not need a machine. Maybe we do just slip through the curtain of time into the place where we want to go, and we don't need a machine. Would that be science fiction?
It wouldn't be fiction.
Oh, okay. So it's like it would just science be reality. Act.
I do think we need something speculative for it to be sci-fi. But I don't think we're speculating as to whether or not some chair in a cafe can transport us to different time periods. Right? That's not possible.
You can sit in the chair all you want, but you have to have the coffee. That's part of the ceremony.
Yeah. Are you arguing that it's sci-fi?
Huh? Do I think it?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And I was trying hard to make it sci-fi for all of the time. I read it twice.
Yeah, you really liked the book. That's what you wanted to talk about.
I am a romantic. I don't live in the sad, but I liked how this book played with my emotions but didn't beat me up. I could read this and feel sad, or I could feel hopeful, and it wasn't overwhelming for me. When I read this book, I also wanted to see how the culture affected these ideas. And I'm not sure about the translator or how it was translated, but I found that there were some differences in how people treat each other, speak with each other, different than what I'm used to.
A few things strike me, like I say the color white is a symbol. White in Asia is associated with death. It's really the opposite. In Western culture, we think of black being associated with death. So there's people wearing white or play with light a little bit there. So there's some things like that. I guess I'd want to hear more about what you were thinking in terms of just etiquette or...
Etiquette and how the author played the internal thinking of the characters about how they thought the other character might perceive them was different than how I would think about how others perceive me. Is that making sense? I don't have an example from the story. I should have it right now. The author said in that interview I was talking about, he was writing about people with a Japanese sense of awkwardness, putting feelings into words. So, you know, that I can't tell you that I have Alzheimer's yet, but I've written it down in this letter, and I want to give you my feelings about this, but I just haven't been able to express that. The girl who said, I want you to stay. I don't want you to leave. You're my boyfriend. I thought we were going to get married, for heaven's sakes. Didn't say that. That regret that you're talking about is something that she used the chair to go back in time to work out for herself. I think she did a good job. I think in that way, when I first was thinking about this story and time travel with all of these rules, what would it do? Even in the story, they said, went out in the newspaper that this cafe can send you back in time. So everybody lined up until they heard about all of the rules. Until your coffee gets cold isn't a lot of time. Having to talk with people only in the cafe is a little different, because are you sure those people are going to be in the cafe? You can only talk to somebody who is there.
Right.
How is that ever going to be helpful to anyone? And the author gave us four different ways that really worked, at least for me.
It's a clever way to set some parameters. Like the other thing they say later is that you can't change the present or the future.
That's really important. The author said that so many times.
Yeah, I think this is a really beautiful novel in a lot of ways. But what I love about sci-fi is the mind-bending kind of aspects of trying to think through. At some point, I just get lost in it, the paradoxes and how somebody, once you start going back, you inevitably change things. And that's another point for me where it's just not possible. As soon as you go back, right, there's that little butterfly effect that we talked about with the Sound of Thunder. Yeah, yeah. There's just the act of doing that for even a second. It changes something. It has to. And so to remove that entirely is a clever way of retaining the focus on the love stories and the theme of regret and all that. So I think it's really, really clever. It works really well for this novel. It didn't excite me in the same way that time travel can, because it wasn't playing with those possibilities.
So what you were saying about the cause and effect, and what you were saying about how the rules evened out that cause and effect idea that stories like Sound of Thunder and other time travel stories have changed the story. But with this story, the cause and effect problem wasn't there because of the rules. So there were no changes to the present. But I have to ask you, in this scenario, then the future could change because your mindset and how you interacted with the past has to change your future. Not the present so much, but how you think in the future. There were changes because of time travel.
Well, there's sort of a change to the present, too, to some degree. That last story, so you said you really liked that one. Do you
that was my favorite. This is
do you want to say a bit about that, and I'll try to...
This is the story about Kay, Nagari's wife, and Kay has...
Nagari's the cafe owner.
Cafe owner, and Kay has a heart defect that really is going to shorten her life. She's struggling with this. But her attitude is so fantastic, so optimistic, that it evens it out. She gets pregnant, and she wants the kid. Nagari's not so much. He wants his wife. And when she gets to the point where it's a struggle for her to be pregnant, she gets an opportunity to go to the future. Now, this is the only time that the chair is used to go to the future. And that was a little bit of a surprise in the book because, we're thinking always going to the past. She goes to the future. What does she do? She wants to meet her daughter to make sure she's happy, healthy. And that was so interesting to me.
Yeah, then to come back to what we're just saying, that does change the present because it gives her sort of this emotional strength that can translate into physical strength to carry through with the pregnancy, knowing that she's probably not going to live, but it becomes worth it to her when she can see that her daughter does live and turns out to be healthy and well.
Yeah, so the sacrifice is worth it.
Yeah, I liked how the daughter appears in the previous story as somebody who's in the cafe.
And yes.
In retrospect, it's pretty funny because she goes back in time and sits in the cafe, and Nagari, the owner, comes in and he thinks that she's there to see him. And in some ways, it's almost a little bit perverse in retrospect because it's like this cute young girl who's actually a teenager, and he thinks that she's interested in him, and he sits down and he's this gruff, quiet dude. He's almost like trying to be a little bit flirtatious, and she's amused by it and not interested in talking to him at all because it turns out he's her father, but we don't know that when we're reading that story.
Right.
And she's there to see the mother because we find out later that she had met the mother, right, one time, because the last story, the mother, Kay, travels to the future. And so then after that the girl comes back in order to take a photo with her mother to bring back to the future. Can you bring a photo back to the future? You can? Back to the future?
Hey, that sounds like science fiction to me.
Yeah. You're
bringing back a picture.
Back to the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does bring back a little camera that's like a unusual, right? Really small, thin.
There's your sci-fi camera, device. Transparent. Yeah. Okay, sci-fi device.
Yeah, there we go. We've done it.
My favorite.
Yeah, it's sci-fi.
My favorite one. Oh, no. But I do find it interesting how certain, I suppose this has been around for so long and everybody knows about it but me, but these tropes can be interchanged like puzzle pieces in writing. I can have a romance novel with time travel and make it work, but it's not really sci-fi.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what Outlander's like in a lot of ways, I think, as they begin to move through time. I've never watched it, or I don't know enough, but have you seen it?
I watched the first season, which was awesome.
I think, and I watched the first couple episodes at one point.
Yeah, yeah. And I watched it specifically for this, the time travel stuff.
Hmm.
A little disappointed.
But yeah, I think later there's more time periods involved, I want to say, but yeah, I don't really know.
Okay.
I liked the story of the sisters quite a bit. That was probably my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the husband and wife one with the Alzheimer's, I was like, I just don't even want to be reading this. Yeah. Too sad. The Lovers was, that's the first one. That was intriguing. It feels like a bit of a warm up. I think one of the things I liked about this story, there's a sequel too, which I can only order actually both books in one.
I think there are four books.
Oh, there are four. Okay. So with the only copy I could find, for whatever reason in the moment, I got this one and then a set of short stories that follows it. And I liked how it's all set in this cafe. So I like that. And I liked how the characters all appear in each story. I think, I don't know if they always do, but if they don't, it's pretty close. But they always have a brief appearance at some point. And then so, like when we're finally getting the story of, I pronounced it Hirai, and her sister Kumi, little sister. Hirai is this somewhat flamboyant, she's like this bar owner, this sort of hostess bar owner down the road. She is very outspoken, she dresses in bright colors and young, cool,
charismatic
woman.
Yeah, I got the feeling that if you didn't like her, she was fine with that. If you liked her, she was fine with that too. And I think that's the way she ran her business. If you don't like it here, okay. But she had quite a following in her business, so it was...
Yeah, people liked that about her. There was something, she's a foil or for this Japanese etiquette stereotype, right? She doesn't fit that. And so there was something really interesting there. But she appears in these stories briefly here or there. And at some point, she's hiding from her sister who keeps visiting her. And she's like underneath this counter for this. That was a pretty comedic moment where the sister has ordered this crazy amount of food. It's huge day-long consumption of whatever the cafe offers while she's writing this letter to Hirai. That was in an earlier story, right? And it's not really explained so much. And then we get to the story of the sisters, and we find out at that point that Kumi, the younger sister, that Hirai had left, ran away from home, right, when she was old enough to, and left her sister to inherit this inn and run this inn. And that seems pretty ignoble in some ways, not cool. He left the younger sister to do this thing he didn't want to do, but she's her own person. Hirai's her own person, and she's running her bar, and she doesn't care. The sister keeps coming. So we get to this story with the sisters, and we find out that, spoiler alert, there's always spoilers here on Life, Death, Sci-Fi.
Oh, we're way past that.
Yeah, you might hear some coffee being made in the background. It seems appropriate for this story. Just pretend like we're in a cafe. There's a little ambient noise here. Anyway, with the sisters, we find out on the way back when Kumi was heading back to the inn in this smaller town away from Tokyo, when she left, having left this letter for Hirai, Kumi's killed in a car crash. And so then Harai has gone back to attend the funeral to your parents, and she comes back having done this, and she's her usual self, not really seeming to deal with this trauma in a way.
Yes, yeah. She wasn't able to deal with the trauma until right. Something happened. I can't remember what.
She's given the letter. I think it's Kay or Kazu. One of them has
That's
kept the letter.
Right. That's right.
And she reads this letter. She'd never expressed interest in the chair and time traveling before. But when she reads this letter, I don't know if it was exactly the letter itself so much, but she's, I think, drawn to go back for two reasons. One is she wants to see her sister again, right? There's a feeling maybe something's unsaid. And then she also wanted to know what the sister's dream was. And that brings me to what I really liked about this story. There's a bit of a twist there where Uriah is going back in time. She does meet her sister on the day her sister comes back to write this letter. And she assumes that her sister had this dream to go off and do something and that she wasn't able to do it because Harai had left and wasn't taking care of the inn. Yeah, what she finds out is that the dream the sister had, this was really sweet, was she just wanted to run the inn with Harai.
With her sister.
Yeah, it's a bit bittersweet, right? Because that can never happen now. But how sweet that she had. That was her dream, was not to leave the inn, but to run it with her sister. That's what she really wanted. And then it has a bit of, hope, happiness in these where she goes back. And she, even though her parents weren't speaking to her at the funeral, she still goes back and is going to run this inn. Because she promises her sister that when she goes back in time.
Yes.
Okay, so here we are in the cafe Funiculi, Funicula. We're wrapping it up. We already know that the next episode here at Life, Death, Sci-Fi is going to be Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. What?
I did finally get my copy of Calico from the Seattle Public Library.
Huh?
There's three people waiting, and I've got 2 weeks to read it. I'm just saying.
Okay.
We could slip another in there. That would be around an even number 10. I know I'm excited about Frankenstein, too. And we just saw Poor Things the other day, which had me thinking about Frankenstein quite a bit.
Okay. Calico is definitely science fiction. You'll be so happy. Science fiction and mystery is something that is like a package for me. And it's interesting. It's really clever novel. Let's do it. I'll probably read it again,
Okay. All right.
But
that sounds good.
It's definitely a winner, and I think it's an easy read, too. I think you'll like it.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like a page-turner.
And it has a couple of surprises, too, that make it nice. Any last comments about magical realism and patronite and science fiction, romance novels? You could have a mystery with time travel. Oh, there are a couple of them. The mystery where the detective from the present time is suddenly transported back to 1987. Have you seen that series? I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's a mystery. With time travel, before the coffee gets cold, is that it's got the time travel trope in there, but no science fiction.
Are you talking about
a show?
The Quantum Leap. I remember liking that when I was younger, though. Watching that with my parents, I think.
Getting warmed up for Life, Death, Sci-Fi and time travel.
There we go.
Time travel.
Yeah, so I guess I would recommend this. I think I'd recommend it.
Before the coffee gets cold?
Yeah.
I'll recommend? Oh, yeah, totally I would recommend it, but don't go into it thinking it's sci-fi. That's only fair. But if you want to have a taste of what another culture thinks and feels about issues, different kinds of issues, love and regret and all of that, I think this is a winner.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we didn't really talk about the writing of it, but beautifully written. And there's something, I haven't read a lot of Japanese authors. I've read quite a bit of Murakami, a little bit of Kawabata. I'm trying to think of who else. Really not many. And I'm forgetting who wrote. It's a pen name. It's like something banana. Like The Kitchen. Yeah, I feel like all those have a similar sort of pacing to them that I find...
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I find really relaxing and enjoyable. I've only spent one long weekend in Tokyo, and in some ways, things are so rushed, right? Like you can feel, like if you're getting taking the subway there, these trains, and everybody's moving so quickly. But if you just step over to the right place, there's a fast lane and a slow lane. And I feel like reading these novels is like being in those slow, quiet sort of moments. It's like you're sitting on some bench in a park, just watching the world slowly go by. I find that really enjoyable. Yeah, there's something about that. I may be curious to read a Japanese author that didn't write in that way. I wonder what it sounds like. I don't know.
Or how's this? Oh, for like Death Sci-Fi, find a Japanese writer that does science fiction.
Yeah, that's what we probably do. Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to talk about whether we... Yeah, how do we... Yeah, hey, it's our podcast. We can do what we want to, right? Yeah.
Are there rules?
We can define it however we'd like, apparently.
We should have a list of time travel rules.
Probably, yeah.
In order to be part of Life, Death, Sci-Fi, you need to follow these rules.
Yeah, we need a little manifesto of some sort. Yeah.
You have a great day.
You too, yeah.
And I'll see you at the Spaceman's Ball.
See you at the Spaceman's Ball. Talk soon.
Okay.
Life, Death, Sci-Fi.